106.9. Free FM.
Free FM. Free FM.
Hello, this is Pendulette in Las Vegas, Nevada, Vintage Nude Studio with Michael Goudeau. And this is a show we didn't have to prepare for.
Not at all.
We didn't prepare.
It's
usually, you know, we read the papers, we look through stuff, we plan what we're going to be talking about. But today, as promised yesterday, we have Adam Carolla as a guest.
Great to be here. Thanks for not preparing.
And we figured,
I didn't want to ruin my streak, you know.
We figured that since you do 4 hours a day, and this is an hour show, there's no sweat whatsoever.
We're done.
We're done already. We can just say, just getting introduced is that.
Yeah.
We've been discovering very quickly that we're the same person. You have a Mini Cooper.
We are simpatico, with the emphasis on potty. We have a Mini Cooper. We love sex devices.
I have three Mini Coopers.
We love architecture. Well, you're a big man. Yes, your scrotum rides alongside in
exactly.
One.
Exactly. Put it over there by the side with a gangsta lean.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, you are a lot of man. You know, it's funny. They're guys. I think we've met before, but I don't remember you being. Maybe you've grown a couple of inches.
Yeah, what I think
are you,
so.
Are you six, seven?
I've let myself go. I put on about 6 inches.
6 inches.
Yeah.
I
was only 5'10" when I was young.
Yeah, so what are you? Are you about 6'7"?
About 6'6".
6'6", and I'm going to go three bells.
Just about. Yeah.
All right.
I mean, a little bit below that, but I won't bust you.
You wear it well.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
I could eat off your head.
Yes, you could.
You could put a sandwich up there. I could eat comfortably.
You would, but you wouldn't want to because there would be things in your sandwich you've never seen before.
You've got a nice clean hat on.
I do. And I wear a hat because I have that kind of Brillo-y head.
Yeah, yeah.
And otherwise, I'd have to put that weird product in it.
Well, see, I have two choices. I can either go very short on my hair or very long, because in between you go through that Burt Convy phase.
Yes.
Looks like you would go through, too.
My Burt Convy phase lasted from the eighth grade to about 6 months ago. And it's great. You want to talk about not getting laid in high school, try looking like Burt Convy.
Yeah, it's a very, very bad thing. But I was lucky.
I once was described as a young Elliot Gould by a hot 18-year-old chick. I almost killed myself.
A young Elliot Gould?
Yes. Yeah, I know. And Kimmel describes me as a very ugly Pete Sampras. And I'm like, do you have to emphasize the ugly part? You couldn't say it just looked like Pete Sampras? Well, an ugly Pete Sampras.
He's a tennis guy, right?
Yes.
You know, there's a nut in Vegas. A woman, a nut, Angela Sampras, who was a stalker of Pete Sampras and changed her name to his last name to pretend they were married. And now she's a very successful producer.
Stalker. Really? Very successful stalker.
She has a successful show called, a topless show called X. Now, I don't know why a topless show based on the life of Malcolm X has been successful, but I guess she could, by any means necessary.
Could be the X chromosome. Maybe she's thinking that
sure,
way.
Sure, maybe. Sure,
again,
could be that way.
Again,
but
a
I just,
call.
You see X, I think Malcolm X.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, too. So you an ugly, very ugly Pete Sampras, they say?
Yes. Yeah. Well, he's downgraded it to just ugly Pete Sampras since Pete's hair is thinned out.
Okay, good. So,
right. It's not that so I'm getting better looking. It's that he's getting uglier and we're meeting somewhere in the middle.
You like doing the radio show in L.A.?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, getting up in the morning sucks. And it's a weird thing.
What time do you get up?
I get up at 5, a couple minutes to 5.
You should never be getting up around 5 unless you're going fishing.
I know. Well, here's the thing, too, as I describe it to everybody. You know, I have a job I like. I work with people I like. I get paid good money. And so there is a difference between getting up at 5 and going to a place where you want to go with people you want to see and being well compensated and doing what I used to do, which was construction, going with a bunch of illegals and a bunch of racists and a bunch of guys that call their kids the kid, you know, and a bunch of the kids don't even have names. Yeah, you know, the old lady, she wants some money for some child support I owe for the kid, but screw it, I'm getting a new Kirker pipe for the jet ski. Screw that, bitch. Yeah, bunch of guys like that, or going and doing what you want to do. So what you're getting up to, you know, I said to people, hey, man, if you're getting up and going fishing, or you're getting up and going hunting, or you're getting up and going wherever you want to go on a vacation, you know that thing where, hey, we're going to Europe, we're getting up at 5, you're bound out of bed. But
have you been to Europe?
No.
Not worth getting up at 5.
Well,
Europe looks just like Las Vegas, except it's dirtier.
The point is if you're going where you want to go, you're bound out of bed. And if you're going to court, you don't. And this is somewhere in between court and Europe. That's what I'm saying.
And you work construction forever?
Forever, yes. And it's over. The good news is the show, it's over by 10 in the morning and you don't remember doing it. It's like, you don't remember taking a leak in the middle of the night when you get up. And you know when you get that phone call in the middle of the night?
Sure.
You have a lucid conversation, then you hang up, and then you have no recollection of it the following morning when you wake up. That's what the radio show's like.
So do you take naps or do you go to bed early?
Oh yeah,
because it was great when they would do like these morning DJs who would go to sleep at 10. Yeah. They'd be trying to be hip the next morning.
It is it's really like for me it's an extra tough transition because I did Loveline Radio every night for 10 years, which was 10 p.m. to midnight. So I would go to bed at 2:30 and get up at 9:30. So now I've got my schedule flipped over. But, yeah, I take a nap a couple hours in the afternoon.
Because this is early for me. Because, I finish up the show over at the Rio. We finish up at about, I get home about midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time you chill out from doing a show.
Yeah, let me say this, too. Because you know exactly what I'm talking about. I would get home from doing Loveline about 12:30 at night. And there were plenty of times where I was lamenting that I had to catch an early flight at LAX and I had to get up at 5. Or I was doing Howard Stern or something like that and was getting up at 3 in the morning. And all these a-holes would always do this thing where they go, look, you just go to bed the second you get home. As a matter of fact, start going to bed in the driveway before the car comes to stop. And I'm like, look, I just got off work. It's 12:30. I can't just go to bed. And they would always go, why not? It's 12:39. And I would always say, look, what time do you get home from work? Exactly. Well, 7:30. Go to bed.
Exactly.
Go to bed before the streetlights go on.
I've been trying to, I want to be getting up a little bit earlier. And trying to go to sleep, even by 2, is really difficult. Because, you're up on stage and you're shooting bullets at each other. I mean, I guess you don't know what that's like, but shooting bullets at each other and you're screaming and you're yelling.
I mean, unless it's a gay term, and then I know exactly what it's like. But if you're talking about literally firing bullets from a gun, I have no idea. If you're talking about the gay thing, I know it backwards and forwards.
Of course you got it.
Yes.
Mostly backwards.
Mostly backwards, but occasionally I meet a smaller guy. Figure I can handle it.
Sure.
Definitely if you and I hooked up, I'd be doing it backwards.
Sure. I'd be shooting bullets all over.
Yes.
And I have you came in right away and eyeballed the TV at 37 inches instead of 42. You're looking over at my spackle to see how the grout work is.
That's joint compound, actually.
Oh, okay.
It's not spackle. But
you're
I know like what you mean.
You're a man.
I know building.
You can build stuff. Because my dad, always said that a man needs to build his own house.
Really?
And I have failed at that miserably. My dad built his own house. Designed it, built it, every nail, everything.
Really?
Every single thing.
He must be horribly disappointed.
He was
your fingernail polish on and your weird Van Dyke and your funky frames on your glasses. Has he killed himself?
Well, he is dead.
Oh, sorry.
We have, I think we've ruled out suicide.
All right. I don't want to say reopen it, but you may want to take a look.
He was blind the last few years of his life.
Yeah, he was blind the last few years.
He didn't know.
So the poked his eye out with an awl. Couldn't take what had happened to his son. Long hair, but, liberal hippie with his sex swing.
He did have trouble with all of that. But, his biggest complaint about me was that I didn't go to college.
Oh, really?
Okay. Really bothered him because he didn't finish high school, and he really thought that I should go to college. And when I chose not to, or even worse, went to clown college with Ringling Brothers and then went on to be in show business, my dad would always say, this showbiz thing could fall through. You need to get some college. So finally, we were asked to be visiting scholars at MIT, which is the, which is the equivalent of an honorary doctor.
Massachusetts in for technology Institute for Technology.
Exactly.
I mean, it's the highest. It's an engineering school.
Yeah, but it's also school. Also have computer divisions and everything. It's a very very serious school. Once that happened, and once we did a thing there, my dad was happy. That was all he needed. All he needed was that one thing.
Well, you chose the magic highway, which is another gay thing I don't want to get into. It was more literal for you.
I'm shooting bullets on the magic highway.
You went down that road.
Yeah.
And he'd see, my parents didn't care what I did just as long as I got out of the goddamn garage.
Where are you from?
I'm from North Hollywood.
Okay, so you're...
Not so much blue collar, but not a lot of college, and people just needed other people to get out of the house.
Yeah.
That was kind of the thing.
A lot of big family?
No, it's strange, but I have a sister, and the family's kind of fractured, divorce and all that good stuff. But no abuse or anything, at least no overt abuse. Nothing that would hold up in court, but still abuse nonetheless.
Nothing that would get you on the cover of People magazine.
Right, but I would argue a more pervasive, deeper cutting abuse. But anyway, would have liked it. Would have preferred a little slap and diddle over that. Well, my parents were sort of I've described my dad in he wasn't abusive, but not a big fan of mine. Not interested. Our relationship was like this. I was like a team that he didn't follow. He'd heard of the 49ers. But it wasn't his team. I wasn't his team. No problem with the 49ers. Wish him well. As long as they weren't playing his team, which was him. You think about it. So no problem. So, you know, people always say to me, "Oh, what'd your parents think when you told me you wanted to do comedy?" I never even told them. They didn't care. They wanted me to get out of the house. I started swinging a hammer, and that's what happened.
Have they come around, your parents?
Yeah. Well, then I'll tell you. You want to know? Well, I'll tell you. I'll put things into perspective with two good stories. One is two famous Corolla stories. One is no one in my family had or has cable. I think my mother's now gotten it recently. A few years back, probably 5-6 years back, we were at a Thai food restaurant in Hollywood celebrating the birthday of somebody in the family. And the entire family, minus my dad, who'd been divorced, but the entire family was sitting around a table eating this Thai food. And the topic came up that my mom said, you know, I got another one of these flyers. They wanted to sell me cable, 1995. I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, it's a lot of money to pay per month for cable, and I'm just not sure. And so she put this out to the table, and I'm going to say this, you know, verbatim. Can anyone here give me one good reason why I should get cable? Now, at the time, I had two shows on cable. I had The Man Show and Loveline. It was ironic that she said one good reason when her son had two shows on cable, and she said, "Can anybody?" And everybody was dumbfounded. They just stared into their meat crop, and nobody even looked up. And then I think at some point my sister said, "They have a cooking channel. You might want to." No, and I didn't even think about it. And then I got into the car later on and was talking about it with my girlfriend and realized, wait a minute, I have two goddamn shows on cable, and nobody could produce a reason as to why. Now, the second story is the terms of the fandom of my parents is the first radio show I did a couple months back when we started the morning thing. I had my dad on, and he didn't know why he was coming on. He just said, "Dad, come on." And I said, "Dad, I'm going to give you an opportunity to win $10,000 of my money. I brought my checkbook with me. And you're going to have to answer a question, but it's a question that anybody in this room could answer. So it's not going to be tricky, and here it is. I was on a flagship radio station in Los Angeles for over 10 years, arguably K-Rock Los Angeles, arguably one of the biggest, most influential radio stations around, or at least it certainly was during the 10 years I was there, and had been voted Station of the Year by Rolling Stone and stuff many times. I said, "Now," and my dad lived in the San Fernando Valley in North Hollywood the entire time. So he lived in the city that one of the biggest radio stations. I said, "Dad, for $10,000, give me the name of the radio station and give me the number on the dial." Could not produce. And he wanted that 10 grand too. Had no 10 years. Could not produce that answer. So I think that lets you know.
We do depart here. We have a very different thing here. My parents were older. My mom was 45 when I was born.
Wow.
And I have a sister who's 23 years older than me. We're the only two kids. Perhaps I wasn't planned.
Right? Mm-hmm. I'm going with you.
Yeah. Okay. So my parents were, by the time I started to make it, getting very close to retired.
Mm-hmm.
And their hobby became Penn and Teller. So if you were in Greenfield, Massachusetts, if you were a paperboy, mailman, you know, anybody that was traveling salesman that was going door to door, you would have to come in and see our last Letterman appearance.
Wow.
They had everything. They had videotapes lined up and scrapbooks. And when they would go out to eat, because going out to eat when you're in a small rural town is a once a week thing. You know, it's a rather big deal. They would wear, you know, and this is a couple who are at this point in their 70s.
Mm-hmm.
They would wear Penn and Teller T-shirts with a Penn and Teller sweatshirt over it. You know,
wow.
Then,
just in case.
With a Penn and Teller leather tour jacket, which were made to make the crew who were in their 20s appropriately fashionable.
Right.
But they would wear the leather jacket, and my mother, with her either gray hair done well by the hairdresser, would then put a Penn and Teller baseball cap on.
Wow.
And they would go out to the, you know, the local Denny's or whatever and have their dinner. And if
my
parents,
by the way, would do the same thing. I mean, with the Penn and Teller stuff. They were pretty big fans. So I didn't want to tell you.
So they would do that, and they had everything on videotape.
Wow.
And they would watch every show.
Wow.
And
that's how you got this way.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they were so, and you know, at first, I mean, the kind of the opposite of you. At first, I was embarrassed, you know, at how excited they would get about everything. And then I finally grew up and realized that there could be nothing more wonderful than that.
Yeah.
You know, it was just great. And I would, you know, when we did Saturday Night Live, I would send a limo for them, which was about four hours, and they'd come down. I remember the only thing that I ever said that kind of, Dad, don't you know what station I was on, was while they were watching me perform at Saturday Night Live, Robin Williams came in and sat down with them in the green room.
They were distracted.
And did jokes about having a son that did magic while we were doing it. And driving home, my dad said, it sure was nice to meet Robin Williams. And my mother said, we were there to see our son.
Wow.
So there you go.
Wow. I would I know they've passed away.
Yes, yes.
I would like to dig them up and use them as my parents. even in their passing would be more animated about my career.
Well, you know, it is very fashionable. And the backbone of comedy over the past 20 years has been talking about how dysfunctional your family is. And I don't have any of that fodder. My parents treated me wonderfully. And although that may seem like, dressing up in all the Penn and Teller stuff is obsessive. When I was younger, they weren't that way. It was just they were retired. Their son was an adult. And they did it kind of like if their hobby was, watching space shuttle launches.
Well, and also, they went through a Shields and Yarnell phase that lasted about 12 years, so they couldn't wear all your gear. You know, it seems to me that if you're trying to fashion a sense of humor in your child, you either go with the over anything you say, anything that passes your mouth is spun, out of your mouth is spun gold, and it's funny and you're genius. That's the route that Kimmel went, by the way. Or you go my route, which is you sort of get ignored and then you want attention and you go that. Some in between doesn't work. So you go super healthy and the kid says, why shouldn't I be on stage? Why shouldn't I get paid to talk? My ideas are brilliant. I've been hearing it since the third grade.
The Adam way.
It was always incredible because Jimmy Kimmel's parents are very much like your parents when they were in the height of the Penn and Teller craze. And I would show up at his house, it'd be like, "Who? What's that Easter basket doing there? My folks sent it to me out from Arizona." What? Why? Just because it's Easter.
Well, that's wonderful.
You're 33 years old. They send me an Easter basket every. Are you crazy? They send you a goddamn Easter basket from Arizona?
Yeah, my parents would send me maple syrup. And
sent me maple syrup.
Yeah, they did. They would do all of that. They were very. That's the parents can be that way.
Wow.
But
so
the, a certain kind of ignoring and child abuse can make a grown man make a Shields and Yarnell reference in 2006.
Thank you.
That's
thank
the kind
you.
Of horror
well,
you
would
have.
Appreciate
we'll
it.
Be back with more. Who are you again? Adam Carolla. Right for this, Penn Jillette, Las Vegas. I'm too excited to snap properly here. Adam Carolla is here. We're just chatting. Very easy day.
Hold on. It is finger popping time.
All right.
It's finger popping time. Finger pop.
Yeah. It's a nice theme, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm playing bass on that.
Finger popping time.
Finger popping time. We just did
Hyman popping time's coming up in about 20 minutes. You guys want to stick around?
I'm gonna stick around. I did Chris Angel's show yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Angel was talking about you. He said he did your show in L.A., right?
Yes.
And he said that Chris Angel, if anybody could talk more than you, man, it's Adam.
The big talker.
Yeah. He said,
well, yeah.
You won't have to worry about keeping the conversation going with him tomorrow.
I know. It's ironic when people run out of verbiage when they're talking about talking. When they do
that
thing
where
nobody strings together a bunch of words more better than me. You can tell halfway into it they've ran out of their own point. But yeah, Chris Angel, very nice guy.
Very nice guy. And, you know, that nice guy and not crazy, which is almost unheard of in Magic.
Yeah.
You know, he's really sweet. And
I don't know. Who do you think is worse? I mean, on just a cosmic level, magicians or publicists?
I have to say that it's magicians.
Really?
Because publicists have a certain kind of the bubbliness, the puppy quality is annoying, but not actually evil. You know,
right.
Magicians are so insecure because magicians are really one of the only jobs where everybody knows that the person who has the job can't do the job.
Right.
Right. You don't have magic powers.
Right.
So you're coming out and saying, my whole life is dedicated to telling you I could do something that I can't, and you know it.
Mm-hmm.
So when a juggler meets a magician, it's just hell. Because the magician's going, the juggler's going, oh, yeah, my five ball pattern's coming along okay, and I'm doing some nice seven-club passing routines. And magician goes, I bought a box.
Right. are a disproportionate number of magicians gay?
100%.
Okay, because, you know, I started looking at it from a sort of Freudian standpoint when I was watching a show a few years back in Vegas, and you bring the hot chick up. You put her in the box, you start stabbing her.
Oh, yeah,
exactly. Put her in the sword drawer, then you cut her in half, then you make her disappear. This I thought, wow, this is significant.
This was the big mystery of the feminist movement to me, is how magicians got off scot-clean.
Yeah.
You know, because the rage that's in there, too. You know, you've got a beautiful woman, she's on your payroll, and all you can think of doing is slicing her up.
She's half naked, so you put her in a wicker basket and start putting skewers through it.
Yeah, exactly. Genius. That's the first thing that pops into your head.
The
other thing that's so amazing is when you see a magician, and he takes this 19-year-old runaway in a swimsuit with a glitter glued on it by his mother, and he has her on stage, and then his name is on the marquee. He points to her, and then she's the one who does all the work.
Right.
She gets in the box. She has to open the plywood little twist thing the magician built.
Sure.
She has to open that thing and get into this incredibly smelly little space. Sometimes, where there's just been an animal defecating moments before, she curls up in that little space and then closes the lid on top of her while the schmuck outside is getting all the applause.
Yeah, and he's got to hang there so she can get out and take his cape off at some point while he smugly preens to the audience.
Yes. And, you know, and this is something else I can't do. And even the parts of it that can be done by a human, I'm not doing. I'm pointing at other people pretending to do stuff that you know isn't real.
It's a weird, I don't know, you know, I'm wondering if, you know, magicians, you know, minds, obviously, guys who do a lot of voices, they seem very lonely. They weren't the captain of the football team.
No, not one of them.
Those guys couldn't do one.
Well, it's also such a bad choice. You know, I was just talking to this 12-year-old magician who came to our show, and after the show, he was talking to me and saying, you know, I took up magic, and I said, now, you don't have any illusions that you're going to get laid because of a card trick, do you? I mean, there's no part of your mind that thinks you're going to be more popular.
There's David Blaine. That guy makes me angry. Let me talk first about Chris second.
Okay.
He did a thing. Now, I don't think he's, you know, the brightest bulb in the chandelier, but a super nice guy.
Super nice.
And he did this thing where he came on Loveline a few months back, and me and Dr. Drew were there. And at some point, he produced a couple of forks that appear to be made out of styrofoam or covered with tinfoil.
Uh-huh.
And he said, look at these forks. He said, now watch this fork. And I thought, well, how about we go to the kitchen and grab a fork if you want to do something with the fork? No, I got these forks. They're stock. I stopped by a diner on the way and just randomly grabbed a handful out of the silverware tray. But here we go. That's the whole thing about, like, here's the whole thing. I like bending a fork, but you pulling it out of your fanny pack and explaining that you're going to bend the fork makes me think the fork may be in on the forking joke.
Yeah,
so I thought that was interesting, but we looked amused anyway. Yeah. David Blaine did his levitation thing for me once. And the thing about I was unprovoked. I didn't tell him rise or anything. You know, he just called me over and he did that thing where he turned at about a three-quarter turn to me, which made me immediately realize something was up. Because whenever you do something that has nothing to do with what you say you're going to do, that could be the tell.
But
I mean,
you know,
could be part of it.
I just want to tell you that I'm aware
it
that
looked
you,
great, by
you
the way.
Could have a Shields and Yarnell reference coming up.
It's coming.
Because part of the method of the levitation is Shields and Yarnell.
Oh, it is.
It's the same technique mimes use, yes. But
yeah, he pulled me, turned me,
he
looked over
his
shoulder,
place.
And
yeah.
he got in, but it looked great.
You're seeing this live. You'll see this live. It's actually happening. Now close one eye, put your head in this vise,
right.
and I'll be standing over here in the corner in the dark, and doesn't that look like I'm levitating?
We are going to pass you into this functional MRI machine. You stay there. I'm going to do magic on the outside. Turn the lights off!
Yes.
Well, I'm still impressed.
But
I really am.
Well, David Blaine, you know, David Blaine to me is like, you know, the Kingsman with Louie, mm-hmm. you know, because you have all these guys, you know, in the early 60s, you know, toward the end of bebop, you have like Miles Davis and these guys who can just do anything with music and are really, really smart. And everything's just great. Mingus is working. Everybody is just so smart. The Troggs come along with Wild Thing, mm-hmm. you know, or the Kingsmen come along with Louie. Three chords. There isn't one jazz musician in his first 6 months of playing
that can't do this. Right.
And it goes to the top of the charts
right.
because the jazz guys were too smart to realize that 1-4-5 with four beats behind it is a really cool thing. David Blaine, this is what made magicians crazy. David Blaine was going in bars in New York and pulling out a trick that all of us bought when we were 14 years old.
Right.
All of us learned the trick and then gave it up because we learned it when we were 14, which is the only reason we gave it up. Not because it was a bad trick, not because we couldn't do it. We were just sick of it. We'd been there.
Right.
We played the 1-4-5 in 4-4 time.
Right.
So, we were done. So he came along and took these tricks, and you'd see, you know, it wasn't bad for us because we had a career, but you'd see amateurs that had worked, you know, 15 years doing a perfect bottom deal in a second and could do, you know, one-handed passes that no one could see, and they're seeing this guy with a trick that could be bought for $35 in any magic shop doing it for Leonardo DiCaprio, and they were just going, jerk! Jerk!
Right.
The point was that were the ones that were wrong.
And then
it was
banging their girlfriend, by the way.
Banging their girlfriend. No,
insult to injury. Well, they don't have girlfriends, but if they
exactly.
the proverbial girlfriend. If they had one, he would have nailed them.
Absolutely. No doubt about it.
I know. One model after the next.
Yeah.
One beautiful songstress after the next. That's the part that makes you're angry as a magician. I'm angry as a man. You understand? It runs much deeper.
And the strange thing is one is not a subset of the other, as you would think.
Well, you got to
two different things. Angry as a magician, angry as a man. The Venn diagram of that does not intersect whatsoever.
You got to think about society and the one that we're living in that, you know, makes NASCAR.
Well, that was awfully Paul McCartney. The society that we're living in?
Yeah, I know.
How about just society?
You know, let me say
society.
This about Paul McCartney, okay. by the way. This guy is a mad scientist. He's diabolical because everybody else hooks up with chicks. You know, his wife dies. He hooks up at like age 55, 56 with a chick who's in her late 20s, early 30s, and gets no crap about it.
Because
she's missing a leg.
Exactly. The genius of that.
I know.
It's amazing. You know, no one can go. You could go. He's with this young bimbo, but no one's going to go. He's with Stumpy,
right?
Yeah. All of the pressure is on us to
That's
accept
right.
that. Yeah.
Get your prosthetic limb and start looking for landmines, and you're off the hook. As soon as you see that face shield go on, and you see a little something on CNN, you're off the. You know, I had this thought. I had this thought too. The names too are important. Like I thought, if I, you know, eventually I'll get divorced, I'll be in my 50s, I'll go for my trophy wife, who's, you know, 17 or 18. Mm-hmm. If her name is Brittany, I'm screwed.
Right.
But if you could change her name to Gertrude,
Maud, sure.
or Betty, or something like that, I think I'd be off the hook.
And maybe have her missing an arm.
Okay, you could take that off, no problem.
Sure,
you magicians
sure. I have such rage.
Women.
Rage toward women. Being a professional magician,
sure.
Something could go wrong. I get a huge amount of press. You get a trophy wife. Neither of us get busted.
We dodge a bullet. She's got no arm.
Just terrific. We'll be back with more Adam Carolla right after whatever you're going to do. Ben Gillette here. Michael Goudeau, who's just giggling.
I'm just giggling.
Finger popping. I'm here with Adam Carolla. And this afternoon, we're doing this kind of wife swap thing, mm-hmm. where you came on and did my show, and then over at the Palms, that where you are?
Yep.
The Palms at 3 o'clock today, you're starting your show. I was just thinking that I'd go on at 4.
So. Well, that is
but you start
your
at
world.
Three.
We just live
sure.
in it. Yeah,
limited
yeah we're all just sort of extras in your play.
I'll show up at 4 and the real show
that's
will begin.
That's when it'll begin in your head. But we'll start at 3 and go to 7, and then I think it'll be live out here in Vegas, and then it'll repeat in the morning at its normal time tomorrow.
Right. In Los Angeles. Are you in Los Angeles? What are the cities you in with your big morning show?
Let's see.
You're like you all know everything west of the Mason-Dixon or something?
Yeah, we're in San Francisco, Seattle, Arizona, San Diego, Los Angeles, Vegas, and maybe a couple other markets
so
that
you're
I'm
just,
forgetting right
and you're
now.
You're talking about the new west, really.
Yes.
Yeah, because we had some people writing in complaining that you're not in New York.
Well, that would be nice. I'd like to be in New York.
Yeah.
I think I'm probably the same as you are in that we just we have opinions and we'd like them shared with as many people as could possibly listen.
And speaking of which, my wife informed me very excited a few weeks ago that you are also an out-of-the-closet atheist. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, which is fabulous. You know, in the 1880s, you know, the three highest paid speakers – in the United States of America, were atheists.
Really?
Yeah, it was Robert Ingersoll, Tom Huxley, and Mark Twain.
Well, we can all and, enjoy them in hell when we see them there.
And then since you know the past 40 years or so, mm-hmm. Atheists have not been doing as well. They've been and now you know you are the big LA DJ.
Well,
have you ever been religious?
No. No, I mean, obviously, it's like anything, and I just want to go back for a second when I said see them in hell. I always thought that phrase needed to be modified where I yelled at you, I'll see you in hell, because mm-hmm. that means I'm in hell yeah, exactly. with you. I just thought there should be a little modification where I go, I'll see you in hell through a Lexan porthole from a very comfortable lounge, air-conditioned lounge, while I'll be viewing you
fancy
in hell.
CD.
But I think a lot of times that's used in things like Fistful of Dogs.
Yes.
Where the person is saying we're both bad.
Well,
men.
Maybe that's
I think that's
it.
Really supposed to be part of
the,
it.
The
see you in hell because we're both evil, but I'm a little less evil.
Right. The thing about it is I mean, I don't even know where to begin. If you weren't indoctrinated
Genesis.
Into this, it sounds like a far-fetched fairy tale, obviously. I mean, when you take religion and you see, well, the Christians or the born-agains or the Hasidic Jews or the Muslims, if you were not born into that culture, right. it seems like the most outlandish thing in the world. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you could take any Christian and just have them born into fundamentalist, you know, Hasidim Jews, and they would be walking around with the beard and the whole get-up. So obviously, if you weren't indoctrinated into that early on, then it makes no sense to you. I also argue this, and I'm very insulted when people say, well, without religion, what's to stop people?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Like it's somehow we don't know that it's intrinsically wrong to kill mm-hmm. or to cheat or to do whatever other things
well,
it says in the Bible.
It's frightening because you have people that look you in the eye and going, you know, if it weren't for religion, I'd be killing and raping everybody.
Right.
You just got to go. That's not me.
Right.
No, maybe you should be locked up just for saying that.
I would rather everyone have a police department built into them rather than have one around them in the form of a church or a Bible or
sure.
whatever, and they can always repent for. If you are an atheist and you have a set of values and moral codes like we do, you can't do anything wrong because your viscera won't let you. It's mm-hmm. within. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. And I also say this to these a-holes that make these accusations. How many people on death row are atheists?
Well, that's we were just talking about.
They all love Jesus, and they put a shiv in a Korean liquor store owner because they love Jesus that much.
Yeah, we were looking at the numbers of people in prison. You know, they did this survey of like 70,000. And the number, I mean, atheists in prison are lower than Scientologists, you know?
Sure.
And I mean, and we're talking about, you know, the number of population because atheists are about 20%. Mm-hmm. And in prison, it's 0.2%.
Yeah.
0.2%.
Right. You know? So there you go. Yeah. And they always do
0.2%.
It's
0.2%. Out of 95,000, it was 100 and. 65.
Yeah. Insulting and ridiculous. I used to work with born-again gangbangers who installing closets in Burbank, and these were amongst the scariest people I've ever met in my life. A guy thumping a Bible, asking for traveling mercy and speaking in tongues with a teardrop tattoo. This is a frightening guy. I just feel like, look, the first people are scared to die. Obviously, and the second somebody figured out somebody died and got frightened about it, they had to concoct a fairy tale. And it amazes me that intelligent people buy into this crazy fairy tale. And I wish it was true.
No,
do.
You don't. You don't wish it was true.
I wish it was true.
You would rather see. There's a wonderful article by Christopher Hitchens about atheists who say, "I wish I could believe," or "I wish it were true," which I understand are two very different things.
Mm-hmm.
But the "I wish it were true" thing. Do you really wish that there was a God that was as capricious and weird as the one we're perceiving? Would you like to think that someone you loved died because maybe there was a sin back thousands of years ago? Would you like to believe that you are born with original sin and therefore tortured because there was an apple given by a snake to a woman from a rib of a guy? Do you want to believe that?
I just want to plug the show, man. And it's 3-7. We're going to beat the Palms.
You
know,
Palms.
Come hang out. We might do a beer bong.
Okay.
I don't know. You know? I got a show to do.
So the great thing that happened, remember the Raelians?
Yes.
You remember the Raelians?
Sure.
And there were all these stories on
now,
news.
Were these the cloning ones?
Yeah, the cloning Raelians.
Yes, sure.
And yeah, I wonder whatever happened with that.
They dressed
They announced they were going
to. They came to our show.
Yeah.
Well, they came to our show and
they
said,
should be punished for the things they said or at least called to task for it.
But yeah. The people on television, okay, newscasters and so on, the local news, would talk about how crazy the Raelians were.
Okay? Right.
And it happened to be right around Easter.
Sure.
So the next story they would do, here's the Raelian all dressed in white. Look how crazy he is, saying we came from outer space. And in other news, at the Vatican, the Pope in this hat was addressing, you know.
It's like a bad mushroom trip for all of us atheists. I can't figure out what's going on. I know. I like when you go, look, there's no proof. There's no whatever. And the person looks at you and here's their big argument. Oh, yeah? If there's no God, how did all this get here, smart guy? Really? That's your argument?
Yeah.
I was thinking about the shifting gears minorly to the cults, not the football team, but the habit owning a cult. And I realized that's another thing no one ever really talks about. Talk about all these cult leaders. These are always white guys who want to bang 14-year-olds. It starts as a religious cult, but they all get distilled down to bring me your daughter at a certain point. And no one ever really talks about that aspect of it. Or if they do, they brush by it. But the Catholic Church probably started the same way.
And bring me your sons. That was the only difference there.
I'm 45. I'd like to get laid. And I'm going to get some land in Plentywood, Montana. We'll put a fence around it. We'll get some canned goods. And all you women who are molested by your stepdad and are broken emotionally and have cranked out a kid when you're 17, bring them on down. Come on down.
It's universal love.
Yes, I'll bang you for a while. Then I'll start with your daughters, and don't worry. The man told me it was a good idea. Yes.
Well, that was the nutty thing about Waco, when they had the Branch Davidians.
Sure.
We went in with tanks and lit them on fire because we thought there might be some child molesting. And meanwhile, the Archdiocese of Boston, we just kind of say, well, you guys can work it out on your own.
Well, if you really think about it, and you think about the Cub Scout leader who's molesting the kids, the priest who's molesting the kids, if you do the math, if somebody says, look, I'm going to give my life to, the guy's 46, he's single, he lives in a one-bedroom in Van Nuys, and every weekend he's going up to Mount Pinos with the 13-year-olds, you know what I mean? I've always said, the guys I want to be Boy Scout leaders, we should pick them like jurors. You know what I mean? You should get something in the mail that says, oh, and then you go, oh, holy F. Oh, this sucks. This weekend, I hate kids. All right, whatever. Pack up the s'mores. Let's do it. Let's get this over. Not the guy who's chomping at the bit, who's packed the rucksack on Thursday because they're leaving Saturday morning. I don't want that guy. The guys who are priests, I don't want being priests. The guys that are Boy Scout leaders, I don't want being Boy Scout leaders. I want us to do that. that.
It's amazing how much you can tell, too, isn't it? I mean, when they show, you know, you don't want to be stereotyping and bigoted and jump to conclusions. But when they show you the picture of the priest
yes.
was molesting the boys,
yes.
it's like, how come you all didn't know?
Right.
How come at the 7-Eleven you weren't screaming, lock him up
yes.
now?
I know. It's weird that, you know, when you look into the eyes, whether it's the guy, whether it's the terrorist or the pedophile, you just look in their eyes and you see what they're thinking, because eventually you start looking like what you're thinking. That's how I can tell the gays. You think about schlong 24/7 supremacists. It's the same, you know, bigots, whatever you're thinking. When you're happy, by the way. You yeah. look happy yeah. when you're evil. You look evil when you're a pedophile. You look like a pedophile. That's why I blame the neighbors who never know. Oh, he was a family man. Please. I look right in the guy's eye. And tell you.
Kinky Friedman quotes a man that he met who once said to him, find what you love and let it kill you.
Wow. I like that.
Isn't that a great quote?
He's got my vote.
Yeah. Find what you going to vote for Kinky?
Sure.
Of course, even though you're not in Texas.
Yeah, none of us are in Texas.
I'll
down
mail
there.
It in.
You know, he started today. Kinky Friedman started today getting the petition, right?
Yeah. He's signatures.
How many does he need?
30,000.
Something
around
like
that.
A lot of signatures he needs to get on the ballot.
But, doesn't matter. Yeah. He's a cigar, chain-smoking Jew who bangs a six-string, and he's got my vote.
Yeah. And the Texas Jew boys.
Yeah.
So you're going to hopefully keep this gig for a long time, this morning radio gig, or do you have other aspirations?
No, you know, most people that are in radio are desperately trying to get into television. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was always the other way around. I was sort of in radio, in TV, and trying to get back into radio yeah. full time. I like radio. I like this kind of dialogue, this kind of discourse. You don't get to do this on
no.
TV. The metronome is moving so fast. You have people pointing at clocks. Your ass hits the chair. One syllable comes out of your mouth, and you see a guy with a headset doing the wrap it up
yeah.
thing. I can't take that. And you just never can get the kind of exchange. You never can explore. You can't get below the surface. You're right at the top, right at the veneer.
And I also love that in radio, one of the things I like most about it is that people are half listening.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really wonderful thing, because when you're at like a restaurant or something and a bunch of guys are talking around the table, your mind can wander. You can do
right.
other things and pop in and out. But TV has this assault. I guess a lot of people like eat and do other stuff too. But I like that radio only takes this part of your mind.
But I do think, that being said, that radio penetrates deeper. I think I think when you're watching TV, the visual component of it can distract you sometimes. And as far as absorption of information,
mm-hmm.
I did a little experiment, not on purpose, and I'll make it fast because I'm sure we got a roll. I think I watched the E! True Hollywood Story. She's staring at the clock. I watched an E! True Hollywood Story on, I don't know who, what celebrity, Scott Baio. And I watched it on E! And I watched the hour, and I retained about one-tenth of the information they dispensed in an hour.
Yeah.
Later on, for some reason, I heard the exact same show over the radio,
mm-hmm.
and I realized my retention level was much greater, that I absorbed much more information. Somehow, the visual component being erased let more of it in. So I believe you can penetrate deeper, and you can go places that you can't go on TV, on radio.
Yeah, well, you certainly have longer. I mean, the time makes a big difference. The
right.
fact that you can talk for 4 hours
yeah,
in the morning.
I know. Well, that's a little too much, but yeah, maybe once a week. Yeah.
So we are going to, because now the guy with the headset is doing the
right.
wrap it up, we're going to finish it up. We have Out of the Closet Atheist Adam Carolla, who is going to be doing his big radio show, not this little hour thing, but a big real radio show
right.
at the Palms this afternoon starting at 3. I'll stop over at 4, which is my world. When it really starts. Thank you so much, man. Thanks for driving all the way out
to the house. We're excited to see you.
Okay, we'll have a great time.
Thanks.